Michelle, Chuck is coming back to haunt us.
Chuck just can't help it. Chuck has been nothing but a thorn in poor Jimmy's side since day one.
Really, it's Jimmy, though.
It is Jimmy. It is.
Michelle, what did you think of 409 Wiedershane?
Okay, you know I'm a huge Better Call Saul fan. You know that. This episode was good, but it was not my favorite. So I'm going to kind of have to wah-wah the episode.
Seemed like a middle episode, not an end of the season episode.
Well, right. As I watched it, I realized that this felt to me more like an episode of Breaking Bad than it did of Better Call Saul. That kind of made me sad. It was dark. And there was like this nastiness to it that I don't remember seeing before in Better Call Saul. Even like in the Pinata episode was horrifying and all that, but it wasn't. We knew everything was going to be okay.
I never thought the Pinata episode was horrifying.
Well, I mean, it was certainly nasty and ugly. And what happened was, you know, terrifying, but we knew it was going to be okay. And all this to say that we're sort of used to, like, the penultimate episodes being super good in shows that are super good. And this episode was good. It furthered the narrative. But to me, and this one time, it just wasn't super good.
Well, I think the episode was good. I just think the timing of it was odd. It didn't seem, like I said, it seemed like something in the middle of the season would have fit better. But I really like the episode. I like the scary stuff. I like the Lalo remembering how Hector got his bell. You know, I like that scary stuff. I don't think the pinata thing was scary at all. I think it was kind of a pranky more than scary. But I don't know. It seems like Michelle's coming back to Earth. But it seems like Kim is coming back down to Earth. But then she has this evil smirk on her face with the plan scam. Is she really coming back to Earth, or is she getting more into it? She's kind of celebrating with Jimmy at the dinner.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm unable to follow Kim and what the real Kim is in this one. Maybe that was part of it, too, because it was a little confusing. We've seen her use her powers, so to speak, for good, but we've never seen her use them just to benefit herself. So that was kind of weird. And I don't know. I mean, you know, I know everybody's excited to finally meet Saul and all that. But I've just really enjoyed Jimmy. I've really enjoyed this series for what it is. And I think maybe because we're definitely slipping more into the Breaking Bad part of it, that it just felt a little bit sad to me. And there was lots of great information. They're probably setting us up for a incredible finale, but this just was not my favorite episode.
I think they're using some huge plot time to illustrate people's theories in Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. Like, I think they're using this whole Werner thing to illustrate Mike's half measure, full measure. I think I've said that before. But I think that putting a lot of time and effort into this whole Werner bomb, not bomb, but lab building.
Yes.
Into something, we know the lab gets built, so there's no mystery there. It's not really, you know, it's interesting a little bit, the technology of it, but not episode after episode. I think this is Mike's half measure, full measure lesson that they're teaching us.
Absolutely. I agree with that.
We get some more cultural candy, Michelle, some sweet muscle cars. We see Nacho has a new car. It's an AMC Javelin. Very cool car. My second grade teacher was a lady that had an AMC Javelin just like that. Not as colorfully painted like that, but she had that car as a single teacher,
That's funny. It's funny that you remember that, too.
I remember that. I was thinking, like, teachers don't have cool cars, but this teacher had a really cool car.
I remember when I first realized, like, the power of a cool car. I was in elementary school, and, I mean, I was a girl. I was a girl. And my mom come to pick me up, and she was driving a what's those cars that the doors go up? Like they, you know,
Lamborghini.
Yes, she was driving. All the little boys come running over to the car, and I was like, "Really?
Why was your mom driving a Lamborghini, Michelle?"
Because she was dating a guy who had a Lamborghini. So
in
she
Tennessee, drove
it, picked me up. Amazingly enough, yeah.
Or is that when you lived in Milan?
No, those cars can cross state lines. It's pretty amazing.
So. Michelle, we got some housekeeping to do from last week. Housekeeping is a code word for mistakes.
Okay.
the city that I couldn't think of that you were trying to pronounce the name of, it was not Temecula. It was Tucumcari. That's the one. That's the office of Kevin's bank that he wants the duplicate model. He wants the model for Lubbock to be just like Tucumcari.
Okay.
So Lubbock, Texas is the one that Kim goes in to work on this week, and the Tucumcari is Tucumcari, New Mexico. It's a city in New Mexico. Also, I said that Kim looked like, I think I said Vera Miles, but it's Janet Leigh in Psycho. The movie Psycho stars Janet Leigh.
Oh, okay.
Mother of Jamie Lee Curtis, by the way, who goes on the run after taking money she's supposed to deposit in a bank, and she looks all very pure and clean in a white dress and, you know, a wholesome face and very pretty, but she does something evil in that movie and she pays for it. But that's Janet Leigh, not Vera Miles.
Okay. I didn't know. I don't think I've ever seen that, the original.
Huh?
I don't think I've ever seen the original.
Psycho?
I don't think so.
Come on, Michelle. Your mom drives a Lamborghini. You got to see Psycho.
My mom drove a Lamborghini once, but you're right. I do need to see Psycho.
Anyway, that's all I got for housekeeping.
Okay. Well, there was something that I said last week. When I was doing the upcomings, I said it looks like Ziegler's going through a grate, but it doesn't seem to be the same grate that goes down into the super lab because it looks like there's sky above it. But we see in this episode that the sky above it was not sky at all. It was into the super lab, and it was the plastic sheeting with a light behind it that just ended up in the little teeny tiny clip they did. It looked like sky. So that was definitely off. But
yeah, they just put like a border around their explosion so it doesn't explode into the rest of the lab.
Well, they've had that plastic up anyway, but I guess seeing it at night and seeing the light shining, it looked like sky in the little half-second clip they gave us, but it wasn't. It was the same super lab, so that was something
they haven't
else.
Very clearly shown us how far away this housing unit they have is from this work site that they go to where the lab is, the laundry. They showed us once, but they didn't really make it clear. Like, is it a 10-minute ride? Is it an hour and a half every day?
Yeah, I know.
Is it right next door? You know, what is it? It's obviously a car ride, so it's not right next door. But
yeah, but it's not. It's yeah. We don't really have any idea as far as I can remember seeing. So that's a good point.
I guess we don't really need to know, but
well, it was kind of funny though because when I was watching this with Mike this morning. The guys were playing volleyball, I think. And, you know, I asked Mike, I said, how much free time do they actually have? And I think that Mike was talking about, Mike Ehrmantraut on the show was talking about how they're going to be working 10-hour days. So a 10-hour day is a decent day. And if you added on, you know, a lot of travel time and stuff like that, I don't know how much time they would have for all this seemingly extracurricular activity stuff that they seem to be doing. So,
did Mike comment about the cars?
He didn't today. Isn't that funny? Because when you brought it up, I didn't even think about it. He hadn't even said anything about it, which is funny because I would think he would.
They've had two classic muscle cars now, that Oldsmobile 442 Cutlass and now this Javelin, which is pretty cool.
Speak English, Mike. English. I don't know all this stuff. Okay, we're ready to jump in.
I'm ready.
Okay, so we start off with Kim, and she's going into the city of Lubbock, courthouse place, and she is on crutches. Now, I didn't know. It's the Department of Safety, Department of Building Safety. So she's good. They have a whole building for the Department of Building Safety. Do they? Who would think? Anywhere. I don't know. I guess I need to.
Sure some cities altered. Do.
But she's like really struggling, you know, and I'm thinking, what's going on? She is hopping on one foot, essentially, and she gets in there and she's either really out of breath, which she may be going that far. She pretends like she is. And she gives Shirley behind the counter this sob story, and she acts like she's this kind of, you know, discombobulated attorney who's going to get in trouble because she's not sure she has the right plans. And
got a new baby.
Yeah. Then she said that, and I'm like, okay. Because I didn't know at first if we would, like, skip forward and she'd hurt her leg, or I didn't know.
Well, she lies about a couple things. Did you find yourself searching your memory banks for how Kim hurt her foot?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, for a second. And then I realized we don't know how she hurt. We haven't seen this recently, and I'm wondering, have we gone back in time, or, you know, did... And I just couldn't figure it out. And then when she said that about her 8-month-old, and she kind of tells the little sob story about how she's alone and her brother's come and he's kind of not the best helper she could have. And then, of course, in walks Jimmy in his flip-flops and Jimmy Buffett t-shirt and has left the baby in the car. And chaos ensues, like as it would. And Jimmy sits Milk down on the plans and ruins them. And, of course, we see that it's all just this big scam to for Kim to be able to get Kevin what he wanted with the bigger branch office.
And 13% bigger, Michelle.
13% bigger.
This is a Saul Goodman scam. This is a task that she could have completed with normal efforts in a longer period of time with a little more effort. But it's a shortcut. It's a Saul Goodman shortcut that she's using for fun and profit. Maybe not profit, but for fun. She's getting a little bit of fun out of it, but she's doing it in a way that she could have done it another way and got the same results.
Well, and I think it's profit, too, because Kevin asked her when he was talking about it, he said, can you, you know, make magic happen again? Do you have that in you again or whatever? And she's like, no, sorry, can't do that. And she, you know, she did. And so she's going to be impressive to Kevin. So I think it's definitely, you could definitely look at it for monetary gain, whether she actually made money because of that or not. But you know, I'm feeling bad for Shirley. Shirley is, like, really helping her. And I even asked Mike when we were watching this morning, I said, do you think Shirley could get in trouble over something like that? Like, lose her job or something? And, you know, Mike said I shouldn't worry about Shirley.
Probably not. She had a hard enough time in the leftovers. Probably not, though. I mean, back then, I'm sure nowadays every office like that has a video, so they show... somebody could probably even with video, nobody would ever notice that. This is 13% bigger than we approved. They would never remember. And, you know, unless you just review the video for suspicious stuff.
Yeah, but even then, how would you know?
It would be hard. Yeah, it would be hard.
I mean, you know, you could see that she made that copy legal right there, and that's not probably a, you know, protocol. But other than that, I mean, you wouldn't think anything had been changed, I don't guess. But, you know, being a mom's hard enough and they have to stick together.
Very evil smirk from Kim at the end of this. So we know she's breaking bad still.
Yes, she is. She is. Okay, so then we go to Lalo and Nacho going to visit Hector. And we get that little story about...
Well, first we get the newlywed game, Michelle. Did you watch the Newlywed Game ever?
I did.
It was on the Newlywed. First of all, why is Hector in this old folks' home? Can't the frickin' affluent cartel keep him in a nicer place than he's been stuck in?
That's a good question. Is it like a retirement home, or is it a some kind of rehabilitation facility?
It's a retirement. Still. It's an old folks' home.
Okay.
I mean, some of those are nice, I guess. I mean, that one looked not, it looked okay, but he didn't look very happy there. You'd think that guy would
Hector
have.
Has Hector ever looked happy?
Well, you'd think he'd have, you know, a professional cook and three hookers catering to his every need, and then, you know. And not the frickin' newlywed game. He'd be watching, you know, soccer or something he liked. Stuck there? It's like they can't afford to do anything better for him, and he's like a victim of economic circumstances that, and nobody cares about him, so he's stuck. But a lot of people care about him.
That's a good point. That's actually a great point. I hadn't thought about that. But yeah, why wouldn't he have some kind of personal private care in his home? Or a nice place, alone, personal care, and have his every need cared for. That's a great point. I hadn't thought about it. But this Lalo guy, Lalo. I keep doing that, and I said I wasn't going to. Anyway, he creeps me out.
He's creepy.
Yeah, well, he does a great job. It's almost a Hannibal Lecter-y kind of thing where he talks about these horrible things with a different inflection and tone that makes you think, what kind of person can talk about that like that? But
yeah, he's a leering, smirking. And I didn't even catch this last week, Michelle, but I picked up on it by reading comments and stuff that what's the worst thing somebody can do? If you come home to your house, what's the worst thing somebody can do? And especially maybe you as a woman, is some dude in your kitchen using your utensils and whipping up a meal like in your kitchen? There's even a phrase like "get out of my kitchen," like you're in my kitchen, buddy. Like it's an invasion. He's in the kitchen, you know, taking over the kitchen. It's an invasion by this guy.
That's a great point. Yeah, you're right. You're right, because going into somebody's house and it's a intimacy almost to be in someone's kitchen and doing something in their kitchen. So I think you're right with that. But he goes over the story with Hector, like bringing him back to this memory of this horrible thing, this fire that Hector and him set at some point in the past and burned down this man's hotel, and I think they killed him too, right? That made it sound
like they tortured and killed a professor who started a hotel with his wife watching because he did some slight to Hector, and they were joking and laughing about the memory of it.
Right. And Nacho's sitting there, you know, he's listening to this and he's looking horrified. But Lalo has brought out a bell. He went in and saved a souvenir. And now that was kind of a cool story, I got to admit. We find out about Hector's bell and why. I don't know. It just makes it all the more creepy, him ringing that bell. We know that the professor had rang the bell trying to get the butler or whatever. The concierge or something to come and maybe help him or something. It was just so creepy.
No, well, that's why you have those bells to call for your bellhop or your assistant. Yeah, somebody lower than you. Like, do I compel you to come and do as I request?
That's a good point, too, because, you know, we've got Hector ringing that bell as if he's beckoning as well. But he wants Nacho to leave, and he makes it really clear with his eyes. And as Lalo was telling him the story, he's almost laughing, right, as much as he can in this kind of gaspy way.
Yeah,
he's enjoying this.
They're celebrating this evil torture and murder of this guy in front of his wife. It's like, oh, well, remember that time we won the softball championship? What a great time that was. Yeah, I remember that. It was great. Like, they're celebrating it.
Yes, and that was a terrible, but this is what Lalo does to perk up Hector. And it's just the whole thing is very Breaking Bad. It's very dark. And so Hector wants Nacho to walk away, makes it very clear. Even I got that. And so he does. And poor Nacho, he walks away. And the woman over there who he happens to stand close to gets her purse and moves it away from him. That was horrible. It's just like Nacho cannot catch a break. Did you not feel sorry for him with that?
It's cultural, very cultural, you know. White woman afraid of a Latin guy going to steal her purse.
In the old folks' home?
Wherever.
Okay. So then...
I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying it's probably true.
Oh, of course not. Yeah, I know. It is, and it was horrible, and it was not good to watch. That was not good. So then we see Lalo coming out. We know a little bit of time's passed. We've heard the bell ring and several things, but you can't really hear the conversation. And man, Lalo does not care that Hector's going to aggravate everybody with that bell, right? He's just ding, ding, dinging it, and you can tell it's aggravating everybody in the room. And
that's a Salamanca.
Yep. But he comes out the door and very openly and jovially says, same old Hector, wants to kill everybody.
Yeah.
And walks on. Yeah. So, and they were talking about Gus, right? Because he said he wanted to talk about the Chilean.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I thought. And then we go back to Jimmy and Kim, and they are celebrating in a diner. After they have pulled this shenanigans. And Jimmy's talking about how he has to be up in the morning because he's going to be reinstated tomorrow. And then he goes into, that was interesting too, because he talks about how selling these phones, that it's really helped, or, you know, given an end to a different segment of the population that he can use his lawyer skills on, which is exactly what he does, we know. He says everybody who uses phones are going to need an attorney sooner or later.
Yeah, and then it's perfect marketing for Saul Goodman. That cell phone business is the perfect entree to all the crimes that they need the cell phones for, that they're ultimately going to need a lawyer for.
Sure.
So it's marketing Saul Goodman.
And he even says here, he says, but they know him as Saul Goodman, so that could be a problem. And Kim's like, that's no big deal. So Jimmy kind of brings up the office thing to her again, and she kind of shoots him down. And she talks about how they're using this trickery for good. And he says, well, how is it good when they drove this far so Mesa Verde can have a bigger bank branch?
13% bigger, Michelle.
13, well, yeah. And Kim doesn't even say a word. She just looks at him, and he backs down.
Well, Kim makes the point, let's only use our powers for good. Like, we're good at this, but let's only use our powers for good. And he says, well, what's the good in getting a freaking 13% bigger building out of somebody to trick? You know, we drove 300 miles to trick somebody. What's the good in that? He's got a good point with that.
He does have a good point.
So, Michelle, Kim, at the end of this whole thing, she's kind of comes back to Jimmy. So she's going to have a plan to trick somebody into getting Jimmy reinstated, right? Because he is a lawyer again. He's not a lawyer now. He fails this thing coming up. But she's going to come up with a plan to trick somebody at the board to getting Jimmy back in as a lawyer.
That's what we've got to assume, I suppose, because there
could
be...
And is that a good? Is that a using their powers for good? Like, should Jimmy be a lawyer?
Well, that's a... that could certainly be argued. However, I do feel like Jimmy was shafted in that. I was very offended for Jimmy in that situation. But I guess we'll talk about that when we get there. Let's don't ruin it yet. But what do you think?
I always like to ruin things early, Michelle.
Oh, okay.
Of course, I think that's the this is the prelude to the setup of that, or this is the Department of Redundancy department. This is the plan. This is Kim's plan to get Jimmy back in, is to have some sort of a trick that they pull on this little three-panel board to get, or maybe other people, but to get Jimmy back in, they're using their powers for good. So this sets that all up, I think. And this,
well, I don't see that as not for good. Getting Jimmy back in. Jimmy deserves to be reinstated.
By any means?
No. Absolutely.
Why not just wait
not.
A year and do it the right way?
Wait another year?
Yeah.
And do it the right way? Who says? The guy even told him. He's like, you can reapply next year. Who's even to say he's going to get back in next year? How many years of your life do you wait because somebody decides that?
Well, that's the legal way to do it. I'm just putting that out there, that that would be the right way, the legal way. Not
I
right.
I suppose. Well, sure. But come on. I mean, three other people on any other day who maybe had a nicer breakfast or had breakfast so they didn't feel cranky might have given him a different verdict. So
well, they didn't. You're right. We're jumping that scene. But they didn't deny him because they were cranky. They denied him because he didn't give tribute to Chuck.
But is that right? Is that justice? Is that fair?
It might be right. If he's trying to be deceptive to them and they perceive that as insincerity and deceptiveness, maybe they could deny him for that.
How? They didn't even say deceptive. That's not deceptive. I don't have to talk about anything I don't want to, and particularly something like my brother's death. I mean, something that personal, and they're trying to dig that out of him when it's obvious. And, I mean, I could tell that's what they were going for. Or I figured that's what they were. But that's just none of their business. And
it's a quirky way that we decide things in our legal system is you have to convince people that you're sorry, or you convince a judge that you're, you know, going to work hard on doing the right thing, even though you have the... I mean, certain facts are facts and certain persuasion is persuasion. That's a big part of our legal system. They have to convince
Absolutely.
These people.
But come on, though. Come on. I mean, everything else he said he was right was so on point. But that one thing, he doesn't say exactly the words they want to hear about something that's completely personal.
Well, it is an interview, Michelle. It is not a list of facts and fallacies. It's an
Fun.
Interview. It's a
okay.
persuasion test.
But they didn't. If they had said, tell us about Chuck, then if he had said, oh, well, Chuck who? I don't know who you're talking. That's different.
But it's more nuanced than that. It's like they wanted to see if he would tell them about something they knew about, and he chose not to.
I'm going to really hope you're just playing devil's advocate here, because that is the biggest bunch of nonsense I've ever heard in my life. And if that's the kind of thing that people are actually judged on, then there needs to be a change. Because
well, I'm playing devil's advocate to only a certain degree, because I think they are testing him for his sincerity. And if they think he's covering up Chuck or things that they think he should talk about, and he's not revealing that, he's supposed to be convincing them that he's an above board, on the right path citizen, being honest with them, being totally open, and he's not. He's covering up Chuck, or he's forgetting Chuck because of the blockage that he has mentally about Chuck for some reason. For some reason, he's not talking about Chuck, good or bad, and they perceive that as being insincere, and that's part of how they base their decision.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that is just completely biased and wrong. They wanted him, she even asked him, do you, like, who was your, what was the word she used? Not mentor, but who do you, your inspiration, I think, is the word she used. And she was looking for Chuck specifically. Chuck was not Jimmy's inspiration. So for him to say that to her would have been a lie. So he would have had to have lied and been insincere to convince them he's sincere. And if that's the way the system works, it needs to change, because that's a load of bull.
Well, I'm not saying you're wrong, because I think you're right about they wanted him to talk about that. But I also think Jimmy could have been smarter, and he could have said something like, because I don't think Jimmy totally blocks out Chuck, like he doesn't exist anymore. I think he knows about Chuck still, and I think he could probably guess that this would be an important part of their interest in him. He could say something like, you know, you might be thinking about my brother Chuck, and he and I didn't get along, and it had a very sad ending, and I felt feelings that are difficult for me to express at this hearing. I mean, he could have said something about Chuck.
He could have, but that has nothing to do with him getting reinstated. As I mean, it shouldn't have anything to do with
it. But it makes him appear insincere, Michelle. That they are right about him appearing insincere. Didn't even mention this. Chuck was Babe Ruth. These are baseball players, and Chuck was Babe Ruth. So for him, and they probably thought, well, we're going to get to talk to the guy whose brother was Chuck. You know, to not even bring the guy up, I think was a mistake by Jimmy, and they perceived it weirdly and oddly and used it to not grant him his reinstatement.
I think it was a mistake not to bring him up. I think he should have brought him up. So I will say that. And I was thinking that when he was talking, that he could have brought him up. But to not reinstate him and for him to have to lose another year of his life because he didn't bring up something that as far as they know, could be so personal and so painful that he wouldn't even be able to have a conversation about it without, you know, breaking down. I just think it's ridiculous and selfish, and I don't like it at all. I didn't like that at all. So,
did you like it, Michelle?
Not at all.
All right, Michelle, off Wiedersehen to that boulder.
Well, yeah.
They had the graffiti on the boulder like the kids had the Heisenberg graffiti on the wall.
They did, didn't they? That was pretty cool. Yeah, and Tyrus is on the road waiting to drive a big truck over some, what were those curbs? Some kind of
manhole covers.
So when is that what it was?
Explosion okay. Shot the made the manhole covers bump up a little bit, they would be covered.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So what do you think? So what's going on with Werner? Is he afraid of explosives? Is he nervous about his future as a criminal? Like Mike's going to eliminate them all after this job is over? Or does he just miss his wife? What's going on with this guy?
I think he's tired. Now, this was just my take on it. He's tired. He's old. He's older than these other guys. And he just realizes the price he's paid being there so long and kind of weighing that against the worth. Is it worth it, the price he's paid? But here, I think he's genuinely scared. Like I said, he's older. How many times has he done what he did there? There was some kind of disconnection or whatever. The connection wasn't good, and he had to find it. That was his job. And he has to travel this wire all the way down into this pit, and he gets to the very end and sees the problem, and he starts shaking. I mean, how many times can you do this in life? How many times can you cheat, or not cheat, but get lucky or not make a little mistake or something? And the price is so high, and I think he felt it there. And he doesn't want to die here and leave his wife there. And that was what I was feeling from him. Did you take something different?
I think there's more implication than that. I mean, this is his job. It's a high-risk job. You blow stuff up sometimes. You go into a tunnel that might collapse sometimes. You know, maybe he's tired of it. Maybe he's world-weary of this job that's dangerous. But I think there's a further implication that something else is bothering him. Mike's looking at him like, this guy's not right. Something's bothering him. So I'm wondering if he's worried. Like, these guys taking all these precautions to keep us isolated and not know where we are, what's going to happen at the end. There's a hint of something else that we don't know the answer to this question. But I think it's more than him just being afraid of explosives and 30 years of doing this wearing him down. I think there's more to it than that.
Okay.
It kind of reminded me of, you know, maybe like Hank, when remember Hank had those breakdowns in Juarez, and he had the traumatic incident in the elevator in his office, and one minute he's all stressed out and freaked out, and the next minute he's back to normal and making jokes. Right. This was kind of Werner in this. You know, was that just Hank getting worn down, or does he have some other weird thing working on him?
Yeah. That's a good point with him. I didn't even think that he might be thinking he can never leave. But maybe he is starting to feel that way or worried about that or whatever. Although, so far, they've kept their word to them. Do you think they're not going to let them leave?
Yeah, I don't know, but I think maybe this boulder, the last thing we need to do is get this last boulder. And once they get, maybe that's the trigger for Werner. Like, okay, we're getting near the end. We're almost getting towards completion. We can see the final light at the end of the tunnel for this job being done. What's going to happen at that point?
Yeah, but he had said before that they thought they were done. So I don't think it's that, because he had mentioned to Mike before that they should have been done with the explosives, and then they realized that they weren't. They were going to have to do it again. I just personally felt like in that particular situation, you know, you can do something so many times, but at some point, you know, I mean, your number might, your luck might run out.
And yeah, maybe. But this show isn't Dirty Jobs or construction in a mine shaft. This show is Breaking Bad. You know, it's got an implied other darker fear out there that probably means more than just the normal wearing a guy down who's been a demolition guy.
Yeah, or if they're just showing us. Also, that maybe Mike wasn't as, because in the upcomings before we watched, or the previous, as we watched this episode, the beginning of it, Mike was telling Gus, I've got eyes on him. They repointed that out, and we see here that he doesn't. So maybe they're just showing us that this is Mike's failing by having somebody who is flaky that Mike would have never thought would have been flaky. Mike was worried about Kai.
Maybe. But, you know, they're also showing us the illegal element of it is needing Tyrus to cover up the manhole covers during the exact moment of the explosion. They put that as part of the scene, too. And they celebrate when it syncs up perfectly. So they know they're doing something illegal. I think there's more to it than just being afraid of explosives.
Could be. Could be getting some kind of sense of something like that. Particularly after Mike showed him the coaster last time and kind of came down.
Werner's not a dope. He's very smart. So he's not just some dope like, oh, this is going to be great. When we get all this money, I'll be set for life. Like he's thinking intimately about this thing.
Okay. So they're all celebrating kind of on that same thing. And Kai just absolutely insists that Mike have a beer with him. And Mike's worried about this Ziegler. He goes over to him, he sits with him, he asks him, you know, what's on his mind. And Ziegler tries to poo-poo it away. He's just pleased it all went well, but Mike's not having any of that. We did find out here that Mike was married for 22 years, so that was kind of a cool little piece of information on somebody who's so private. But, okay, so Ziegler's wanting to go home just for the weekend. Do you think he was going to come back?
Well, that's the exact same question we just dove into. If he's not going to come back, it's because he's afraid of a crime and being, you know, it's the same problem, which is viewed in a different light.
Yeah, well, but it is different, because if they had let him go home and he hadn't come back, then he's leaving his guys there. And also, if he really thinks that, would he escape himself and not take his guys with him? Would he not have woken them up and go, come on, we got to get out of here. This is going to be a problem. We're going to scatter.
That's never going to work, all of them getting out. I mean, it's kind of a miracle he got away. It's a question. It's an unanswered question. Is it a thing that you need to get away from? Is it an escape, or is it just, hey, I miss my wife, man, I want to go see her? You know, if he feels like he needs to escape because he's never going to get out of this, it's one thing. And if he just thinks, oh, I got another 7 months of this crap. I need a break. That's a different thing.
It is, but maybe we will see, because if okay, you're right. He would have never gotten out there with all the guys. That's correct. So if he feels like they're going to kill these guys, I don't picture him being the kind of person who's just going to go, too bad, I made it, you didn't. So if he feels like that, when he left, he'll go try to get help for these guys.
I have no reason to know either one or the other, if he's loyal or disloyal. I have no way of telling.
What, if he's loyal or disloyal to his guys?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's loyal to the guys, remember? I mean, Mike wanted to get rid of Kai, and he wouldn't let him.
So why did he leave without them?
Well, that's what I'm saying. It leads me to believe, for what we know right now, that he just wanted to go home, and he wasn't going to be kept somewhere against his will. But if that's not true, then I think he would bring down some. Okay, he's going to have to, if what you're saying is correct, or what you're hypothesizing is correct, he has to bring them down. Because if he doesn't bring them down, they know him. They know his wife. They know his phone number. They will find him.
They're going to prank phone call.
Huh?
We know your phone number. We're going to call you every day.
No, but you know what I'm saying. I mean, they could find him, and he knows that. So he'll have to bring them down if that's the case.
What do you mean bring them down?
He'll have to leave that warehouse and go try to get authorities involved, or be headed to do something like that in place of just going back home and snuggling up on the couch with his
wife. Well, he's not
going
to go to the authorities. That's not even part of what I think is an option. I think he's worried about either him and his crew getting killed, and he chickened out and bailed for himself, or he's just stressed and he wants to see his wife. This is option two, you know, or, you know, I don't know. It's weird because it's created kind of a Gale situation here, Michelle. It's like, once Gale knows the secret to the cook, we don't need Walt anymore. And so we can kill Walt once we know this, once we have a replacement. Once we don't need him, we could kill him. And Werner leaves instructions on how the work can be completed so it won't be interrupted. So now they don't really need him. So I guess this opens the door to us to find out what they really intend to do.
Yeah, I guess. But, I mean, so he left complete instructions on this, like, one page. The other page was like a personal note. Maybe it wasn't. Maybe it's two pages. But are we to believe that that was the whole of his necessary being there, leaving this? I mean,
seems
then get
like
rid
it.
Of
he
him
says
anyway.
That. He says, I'll leave you all the instructions so you won't miss any time while I'm away.
Well, right, but that would only be for the time he's away, for the 4 days or something. There's just no way all he is what was written on those papers. Because if so, then Gus is getting ripped off by him being there anyway. And I just don't picture that.
Well, I don't think they put that in there just so, like, here's a little bit of what you need to know. I think there's some meaning to it.
I don't know that he's not just going to come back.
Then why even do it? Why even have him leave then?
Because it's like you said, I think it's going to end up telling us the difference in half measures and full measures, and why Mike feels as adamantly as he does on that.
Yeah, so Mike lets him make the phone call. It's a kind of a half measure. I don't know. It's weird. This whole thing with the whole lab, like we said, is a tool to chisel some sort of clarity on Mike that we need to know about half measures and full measures.
I completely agree.
I don't think it matters about Werner and his crew getting murdered at the end. I don't think that would even matter one way or the other, whether Gus says, great job, boys, here's enough money for the rest of your life, and we never see them again, or he takes them in the back room and slaughters them. I mean, that's... So what? It's one or the other. It's not really that intimate to the plot. It's about Mike. It's like, what does this leave us after this all happens? What kind of Mike does this leave us?
Yeah, I agree with that. But I also think that it's I do think it matters. I think that you're right about it being about Mike and his half measures, you know, no half measures, which is chilling. But I also think it tells us about Gus. And is Gus going to be the kind of person who would do that? I mean, because Gus tends to keep his word from what I've seen so far, right?
I think Gus always intended to replace Walt and clean him up and kill him at the end. Get his recipe and kill him. I think it was Gus's plan with Walt.
I don't even think Gus had a primary beef with Walt. I think it was Jesse, because Jesse was this loose cannon.
It's not a beef. It's a business plan. I get the secret to the recipe. I kill the originator of that recipe. That recipe is now mine. I think that's his plan. Not a beef, not settling a score. It's a plan.
I guess, but I mean, I picture Gus being more like the kind of person who would buy it from him and, you know, just tell him to go away. And anybody else maybe would, but Walt wouldn't. And Jesse wouldn't. Jesse turned into, like I said, a loose cannon. I don't know. I mean, that's my speculation from years ago memory. So,
why didn't Gus just give Victor $1 million and say, "Go, you're retired now. You saw that you were a witness. Somebody saw you at this crime. I need you to go into hiding."
That's not the same thing.
Well, it is. It's settling something civilly, less than murdering somebody. It's paying them off to be quiet.
Sure, but
Gus doesn't do it that way. Gus, talk about half measure, full measure. Gus is like a absolute measure type of guy.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, and I think that's probably what he's about to teach Mike. But I don't know that that would have made him kill these guys just because they finished this job.
We'll find out, I guess.
We will. I mean, you know, he could... If that were the case, then why bring somebody in from Germany? I mean, why not just...
Because they're the best in the world at it.
Well, that's true. That's true. Yeah. But I mean, you know, you could like just enslave people, kidnap people.
Essentially, that's what they've done. They found the best crew in the world and they enslaved them.
Kind of. Yeah, you're right. Okay, then we go to the scene where Lalo goes in to meet Gus.
I like the Lyle warning of Lalo.
He just looks worried. Lyle, he remembers Nacho, and yeah. So Gus goes out to talk to him, and Lalo likes food, doesn't he? I mean, he like appreciates a good meal. But he's talking about that, and Gus knows this isn't about that. And so they go in the back, and they start having this conversation. Now, what was he... Do you think he was feeling him out to see if he would go against Don Eladio, or do you think he was just messing with
him? This is another multiple-choice question, Michelle. This is either a test of loyalty on Gus. It's a real plan to separate so the Salamancas and Gus can separate from the cartel and go into business together themselves. It's a real investment. Hey, I really want to invest in your chicken business. Or it's a veiled warning. Like, this is me telling you, don't get out of step or you're going to be in big trouble. So we don't know the answer to this either. I'm guessing it's kind of a test of loyalty. But maybe not, because he's disappointed when Gus turns him down. Maybe he does have a real plan to separate from the cartel with Gus and make some sort of business themselves together.
Yeah, that was my take, but I wasn't sure about that. I don't know why else he would do it. It doesn't make any sense, really, to, you know...
He disparages Eladio, which would be very dangerous if Gus went back to Eladio and says, you know, your boy Lalo is coming in here proposing a deal to me, and he's making fun of you at your pool that you're sitting here like a fat cat. Eladio would not like that. Right. So maybe it is a real deal, offer of a deal. Because he is disappointed when Gus says, "I like the current arrangement." he's pissed off.
Okay, do you think that Lalo thinks that what Gus did really is a gesture of peace when he saved Hector, according to Nacho?
When he what?
When he saved Hector. When Gus saved Hector when he fell out.
Well, I think Lalo is investigating. He's got his feelers out on Gus. Like, how's Gus going to react to this?
Yeah.
That's a very good question, though. Does Lalo believe Gus really helped Hector? He has no reason to know that he hurt Hector or that he knows the guy that hurt Hector.
No, not at all. Right.
So I would guess he's interested in the motivation of Gus to help Hector because he knows, he says, the history between you two. I appreciate you helping Hector. I know the history between you two. Like, you have no reason to help him. So he's probably curious about it.
Well, right. And he mentions bad blood, the bad blood between them. And Gus is like, I don't view it that way. So, but he's not happy when he leaves there. You're right. Disappointed or maybe, or he's disrespectful to Gus when he throws the drink out the window.
Yeah, there's some curious curveballs in here. Because he says that Eladio likes the bad blood between the Salamancas and Gus. Like, Don Eladio likes that they're not friends, really, because that keeps them both honest to Eladio. And he wouldn't like it if they got along too well, like they may conspire against Eladio.
Which is kind of what he insinuated they should do.
So is that a test of loyalty? That's a good test of loyalty. Like, hey, let's conspire against this asshole that killed your lover, you know, 14 years ago. Why don't we just do business together and make our own money and fuck this guy? And Gus, you know, doesn't reveal anything. He just says, I like the current arrangement. There's no need to think that there's bad blood. He's smoothing it over.
Right.
But Lalo's disappointed. So if he was just testing him, he wouldn't be disappointed. He'd be like, okay, now I know. But he's very disappointed when he throws that cup down.
Yeah, and he's being now disrespectful to Gus. So, but before he does that, as he's leaving, he says, if you ever need a favor.
Right. So, Gus and is going to go to him for favors.
Right. Well, yeah, but if he does, you know, then that would tie them together. I don't know. But then he says, I'll be back. And then he goes for chicken, of course.
That's a threat. It's a veiled threat. It's a fake offer if you ever need help. He's just saying, I'm going to be around your life forever. I'm going to haunt this business in your life forever. So don't think you're through with me.
And then he has Nacho show him where he picks up the kilos of
the chicken farm.
The chicken farm way outside of town. Okay, then we come back and Jimmy's at his reinstatement hearing, practicing his facial expressions, practicing what he's going to say. And I think we've already probably talked about that whole scene. I thought he did really, really well. And then they ended up asking him, the girl, it was over. And then the one girl says, what does the law mean to you? And Jimmy kind of stumbles for a moment, but then
he was prepared for every question except that one.
Right.
I don't know, Michelle, when you're building credibility, you can do a lot. You can say a lot of things to build up your credibility, but it only takes one thing to tear down your credibility. And that one thing happened in this hearing.
That's true. That's true. I guess you just have to weigh if it should be that way or not. Because if it shouldn't be that way, then what they do might have merit. But if it should be that way, then what Kim and Jimmy are going to do?
I think the answer to this problem, this argument / dilemma that you and I are having is different in the legal arena than it is in normal life situations, because this is what lawyers do. They persuade other people, and if you're going to be dishonest and persuade people by fooling them, you're a good lawyer. But when you're in a hearing, I don't want you to do that to me. I think that's the message this three-panel board gives to Jimmy here. You're trying to fool us. You're not sincere.
I guess, Mike, but if you really want to get down to it, look, this stuff makes me mad, if you can't tell. I feel pretty passionate about this stuff. And if you want to get down to it, that's not what our legal system was set up to do. It wasn't a system set up that the best actors win the show. And it's just a load of crap.
That is how it works, though.
But that's,
I mean, look
not
what we went
what
through this week with Kavanaugh.
Be.
One of those people is going to persuade everybody else, the other, or persuade enough people. Which one do you believe? It's an actress and an actor making points that people will believe or not, and essentially an emotional decision will be made based on their performances.
But I don't believe that's how our system was set up to be.
You can say that, but that's how our system works.
Well, our system works. No. Our system works with evidence. Our system does not work. Our system fails to work if we use emotion in it. And that's not how it was meant to
be. When I say that's how our system works, that's how our system operates. That's how our system is.
Sure,
Kavanaugh will be confirmed or not confirmed based on emotional movements of people believing or not believing him or the accuser.
Sure.
Most cases in court, I think arbitrated cases in court where there's people that make decisions, juries that are convinced, I think those are emotional.
But I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm saying that's wrong. That's not how our system is supposed to be. And I don't think that's maybe how our system was in the past. I think it should be an evidence-based system. And the evidence here is that Jimmy has done what they ask him to do. And the emotional part is this one woman wanted him to mention his brother. And, you know, like I said, we don't know why he does. We know why. She doesn't know why he doesn't mention him. And it could be a very valid reason.
It doesn't matter to them. Because if you're a lawyer and you're supposed to be honest and they think you're not being honest, then you're going to shoot. Your chances are shot.
It shouldn't be about what you think.
It's not what it should or shouldn't be.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Well, we're going to have to just agree to move forward.
No, that's the most bullshit statement.
No, you're sitting here arguing, and I even know that you agree with me. So you're just arguing.
Well, I agree that the right thing should always happen.
Well, sure.
I think OJ should have been convicted because they had evidence, but they persuaded enough. That's why they pick juries. They pick the people they think will believe their story, not the most critical and sharpest analysts of facts. They pick the people they can convince.
Okay, well, then let me say this. If you agree that that is the way it should be, or not should be, but the way it is, then you can't disagree with whatever Kim and Jimmy do to correct that, unless it's something completely underhanded, which I don't think it's going to be as far as the upcoming comes. We'll talk about that. But if they do something just to play on somebody's emotion like she did in this Mesa Verde 13% bigger scheme, then that can't be wrong.
No,
right?
I don't think that's true either, that they can't do anything to get to the right. I think the means, the ways to the means are important too. You can't kidnap a witness. They'll keep them out of testimony, even though the person's guilty and the witness will.
But anything you say, I mean, anything, you know, Kim lied to get her way in that situation.
Yeah, that was wrong.
Okay, but this woman wanting Jimmy to say something, or she's going to take another year of his life just because he doesn't mention his brother and she doesn't know why, that's not wrong?
It's not right that Jimmy has to reveal his feelings about Chuck, but it's not wrong that those people view that as him being insincere and deny him his reinstatement. That's how it works.
you guys, to anybody who's listening to this, Mike and I used to do this before we even podcast. So it's all okay. And he and I having this conversation is not going to get as bad as Kim and Jimmy's conversation probably in a little while. So no worries. I just thought I'd say that.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, it's good if the right thing happens. It's bad if the right thing happens with the wrong input.
You know,
OJ was probably guilty if somebody walked up and then shot him in the head because he got off and he shouldn't have gotten off. That's not right, but it's kind of right. I mean, it's justice. So
it's not just.
I agree that Jimmy shouldn't have to talk about Chuck. And I also agree that the people that are evaluating him, if they think he's being dishonest with them, that they can deny him. I think they both can be true.
It can be true, but I don't think it's right. I don't think they handled it right. I'm very defensive for Jimmy in this situation because they told him to do something for a year. He did it for a year. He goes back in. He's done everything. And somebody doesn't hear something and has no idea why they're not hearing it and just go, no, you need another year to think on this.
But it's their job to decide based on input. It's not a just black and white facts. Here's all the facts. Boom. Here's the binary answer, yes. Binary answer, no. It's an interpretation of what this person is really thinking and their motivation is. Are they being sincere? Are they being insincere? Are they lying? They're an officer of the court. They have to be honest. Is he being honest? Is he trying to trick us? Is he trying
But come on. They're an officer of a court. They have to be honest. And we've just seen that's all that they're not doing is being honest. And they're trying to get him to say, look, we're never going to agree on this. They're trying to get him to say something that is insincere so they will feel like he's sincere. And that pisses me off.
Well, they don't understand the reason.
Then they should, right. Then they shouldn't be putting that kind of judgment on him.
Well,
and nothing you're going to say, well, I mean, should or shouldn't. They're in control of his life. And nothing you're going to say is going to change my opinion on that.
Well, parole, people that go up in front of parole boards probably lie their ass off and act contrite and then go get paroled and go right back into crime. They convince the parole board. It's an acting job, Michelle. You know, it's persuading people.
I don't disagree that that's what happens. But if the parole board tells you, and they don't, as far as I know, I don't really know anything about it. But if the parole board would tell you this next year, don't get in any fights, go to work every day, be kind to this person, and next year you will get out. And then the guy did all that, and then the next year somebody wants him to say the secret word that he doesn't know and doesn't want to say and isn't comfortable saying. And then they go, oh, no, try again. I mean, it's unfair. And I feel like that they were unfair to Jimmy. They told Jimmy what to do. Jimmy did what they told him. And then they're like, nah, you need another year. And I think that's unfair. I don't think it's necessarily going to mean that whatever they do to get Jimmy reinstated, assuming that that's what happens, is justified. But I do think that was really unfair.
Well, it's very nuanced. I mean, they don't even they tell him, okay, we'll let you know in a couple of days in writing. And Jimmy, you know, they knew that moment they weren't going to do it. Or 15 minutes later, they knew they weren't going to reinstate him.
Well, yeah, Jimmy's waiting outside for him.
They could have said, we'll tell you in 15 minutes, go wait in the hallway. And they would have been able to tell him. You know, they contour that in the... We'll get you back to you in a couple days. And, you know, that's not really true, right? They knew in 15 minutes, but it's just how it works.
Yeah, and did you notice any similarity? Because when he walked out, right, because he walked out of the room, and then he started to go back in, and then he kind of caught himself, and he went back and forth for a minute, and he didn't go in. And because maybe he didn't go in, he didn't get what he wanted. But in the NAF situation, when he was interviewing for that job, for the copier salesperson, he left when they said, we'll get back to you in a few days. And then he kind of hee-hawed, and then he went back in, and convince them.
Yeah, I didn't think about that, but he does go back when he needs to know something. He doesn't give up. He's kind of a bulldog.
Right. So anyway, I thought that was interesting. So what do you think about the way he kind of accosted that guy, demanding to know? How'd you feel about that?
It's exactly like the copier job. He wanted to know, do I have the job? You know, and kind of like I said at that time, if you're a real salesman, you don't wait for an answer 3 days later. You close right. that person to give you an answer. Jimmy's, you know, he's motivated to get an answer and he doesn't want to wait.
Yeah, but he already got the answer. The lady came out and her face told him that he didn't.
Well, he probably had a long shot hope of thinking, if I get a hold of this guy, maybe I can change his mind or something. You know, I don't know. Maybe he just wanted a little bit of his ear. You know, I need you to hear me be right. disappointed.
Right. Okay. Then we get Mike going, and we've talked that to death, certainly. But then we get Mike going into the warehouse monitoring trailer. And this is where Ziegler's on the phone with his wife. He's been saying goodbye for 25 minutes. They've been talking for an hour and a half. But she now has to leave because she has to go to a book club. And the only reason I even bring that up is because who knows if that's code for something or whatever later on. And then we go inside the warehouse, and Ziegler's putting out a cigarette by this red phone, and he walks to the porch area of his house and stares at the cameras for a bit, so I knew that was kind of ominous. Then we see Kim, and she's painting this coffee tumbler for Jimmy that says, second, she writes in second, best lawyer again, with fingernail polish, as she's, like, multitasking and taking business calls, and she also has gotten Jimmy a portfolio, some kind of briefcase or something. And Jimmy calls, and she's like, whoa, whoa, slow down, slow down. And then she meets him on top of the parking garage. Now, this scene was terrible. It was awful because Jimmy was everything that's ever frustrated Jimmy in his life. He just laid it on Kim. And this was a hard to watch scene between them. I thought the slow distance between them before was hard, but this was hard.
Yeah, I got to say I'm getting a little tired and worn of Jimmy and Kim being separated and coming back together. Because they're going to come back together again even after this. It's wearing a little thin for me. But yeah, Jimmy's weakness is that he sees all of his faults. He misplaces them on other people. He's using Kim here as that person in this case. You just sleep with me, you know, even though you never thought I was worthy as a lawyer.
Yeah, right. I'm good enough to sleep with, but not good enough to share an office with. He's throwing a tantrum at her. But at the same time, and I agree with you, I don't know if I agree, but I don't disagree with you about this getting old, you know, the back and forth. But these things needed to be said, not in this way, certainly not in this way. When Kim asked him what happened, she says, what did you say about Chuck? And he's like, nothing. And she's like, it's like he smacked her or something. She's like, well, you know. So in place of her saying, you know, Jimmy, if you had said something about Chuck, you would have probably come across as more sincere, which is obviously what she was thinking because she ended up saying it later, but in an ugly way. It's like because they don't say things to one another that need to be said, then they come out when they're angry. Because I think that needed to be said. She needed to tell him, you know, hey, they were looking for something about Chuck, and that was the problem. And, you know, let's see what we can do to fix that. But in place of saying that, she's, you know, I mean, it turns ugly. There's frustration. In place of him saying, you said we were going to get an office together, and it really hurts me that now you don't want to do that. He waits until this moment to bring that stuff up.
Right, she's incredulous that you didn't say anything about Chuck at your lawyer reinstatement hearing, and he's incredulous. Why would I say anything about Chuck? He had nothing, you know, he's not even a part of it. I mean, they're both right, technically.
True. Yeah. But then he throws out, you know, so kick a man when he's down. And then she's like, Jimmy, you are always down.
Well, that's true, too.
It is true. But that is a blow. That's a big one. But then she walks away.
So why is Kim with Jimmy? So Kim is right about Jimmy. He's always down. He's always in trouble. He's always taking shortcuts. He's doing this whole lawyer thing just to impress her. And to impress. It's for the wrong reason, really. It's to impress other people, not to do what he dreams of doing. So she's right about that. And he is always down. Because of that, he's always down on things. And, you know, so why is she with him?
Well, maybe he's right about her, too. Maybe she does like to stoop down and wallow in the dirt sometimes.
Something, I think we've something seen that about flawed her. In Kim that likes Jimmy. It's a flaw, I got to say. She likes these scams that he likes. It's a flaw that she has. It's very interesting. It's good for the show. It's bad for her as a character in the show. But
it's a human being, yeah. Okay, so then she's sitting at home. It's late. She's drinking a beer. And he comes in and he starts packing as if to move. And I gotta say, she is really great at not over-talking things. And she just goes to him and she stands there. And she stands there until he says something. And he says, I messed it all up. And I'm sure he's talking about her and the interview and his life. Who knows what all. And she asks him if he still wants to be a lawyer. He says, yeah. And she goes, okay, we can start with that. So we know that she's still on his side. She's still going to help him or going to attempt to help him. And that was the end of that.
Yeah, I think it was important that the thing that the last scam was somebody in a bureaucratic role. Wasn't some store owner or something. It was like the lady at the...
Yeah, Department of
Housing Drawings Office, mm-hmm. whatever. So it was a bureaucrat. And so Jimmy's problem is with bureaucrats. So they have to pull the wool over the bureaucrats to get Jimmy reinstated. So they kind of know how to do that, and they've proven they can do it. So that's probably why we saw the Mesa Verde plans get swapped.
I don't know that. Okay, the people that he saw are not the ones who reinstate or don't, right? They're just the ones who recommend to the board. Because I think they brought that up sometime during the argument. Because Kim says, well, you know, something, and he goes, well, how can I go before the board and disprove insincere or, you know, whatever. So it has to go somewhere. This is just their recommendation.
So I think they're the board. I think they're the people to persuade.
Well, they're the people to persuade because they give the recommendation. But he hasn't been, to my knowledge, you know, not reinstated yet. It's just that will be these people's recommendation.
Right, but they're the final hurdle. Yay or nay is those three people.
But I don't know that they're going to go back before them to change anything. Maybe, I don't know. But I'm guessing that they're going to take it before somebody else to make a issue.
I think what I learned is that Jimmy says something about how all of my clients know me now as Saul Goodman. Or know me as Jimmy, I can't remember which one. But Saul Goodman is different as Jimmy. So maybe Saul can get a job. So maybe Kim won't help Jimmy be a lawyer again. She'll help Saul become a lawyer. I don't know. I mean, I think they make a point of distinguishing those two names for a reason.
Yeah, and Mike even brought that up this morning. He said, so he's going to now maybe go get a law license under the Saul Goodman name. I'm like, well, yeah.
At the Samoan.
I don't know.
Mail order law school.
Yeah, I don't think that's what's going to happen.
Could be.
I don't know.
Because his license in Breaking Bad is Saul Goodman. Not Jimmy McGill.
It could be, but, I mean, he'd have to wait, right? I mean, that would take longer than a year,
Breaking Bad doesn't start until, like, 3 or 4 years from now in their time universe.
Yeah, it's almost 4 years, I think, before, according to the time. So, maybe. I don't know. we'll talk about it in some of the upcomings. I don't want to spoil in case people don't want to see it, but you know, I think some of that might have had something to tell us where it's going to head. But okay, so Mike's pulling up to the monitoring trailer of the German warehouse housing area and bringing the guys coffee. They got a coffee pot in there, but I guess it's nice. He's bringing them coffee. The guy gives him an update about what went on, that, you know, and then Mike notices some burnt out pixels on some of the cameras. Camera 6 and 10 and one of the cameras outside. And the guy said there was like a 20-second voltage spike, like a flare. And Mike immediately is suspicious. And they go into the warehouse and see that Ziegler's gone. We've pointed out that he left two pages on the bed. We don't see what's in those pages. The guy goes up into like the rooftop area and sees where the locks were cut, the doors were open, and how Ziegler left from the top of the building and got down. And we see Mike out there. He picks up a some kind of laser thing and points it up at the camera, which then we see from the camera angle, which was really cool, and it kind of flares it out an hour. Our vision, our TV vision goes off. And that's how they end this episode.
Yeah, so there's some loose ends to that. Like, why would Ziegler have a laser? Maybe it's part of the construction business, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I could buy that.
How does he know it would pixelate the camera, block out the camera?
Well, it's like you said, he's a smart guy.
You know, what? How did it actually work? Because Mike shines it at the camera, and the camera, you know, can't record while it's being shown, but it's a pixelated, you know. Did he shine it at every camera while he was, why didn't that big blur show up on the camera? Why was it just little pixels? I don't know. It's just, it doesn't matter. Ziegler's gone. We got to find out why he's gone and what he was afraid of. But we don't know that yet.
It didn't leave me with any kind of happy feeling when it went off. So next week, the final episode of this season, episode 10, it's entitled Winner. Winner. Who's the winner? Did you watch the upcomings?
No, I didn't.
Okay. The little clip that they give us about it says, Jimmy turns the page on his reputation, which sounds ominous. Lalo tracks a loose end in Gus's operation. And Mike is forced to make a difficult decision. So that's like a, you know, 1-2 punch right there. That's, nothing sounds happy about this except the title, Winner. Okay. Mike is saying he started out on foot, which gives us a fighting chance. Assuming, of course, he's talking about Ziegler. Lalo is looking through a telescope at a Los Pollos Hermanos truck. Jimmy is saying, through the fire and smoke, a figure emerges. It's like he's giving direction to a movie or commercial or something at this point. Okay, and then they jump to Gus says, what did he tell them? And then it looks like Howard is making a commercial because it's like a grainy, kind of pixelated view of him saying, Hamlin, Hamlin, McGill is back. And then we see a picture of Jimmy at, I believe it was Chuck's grave. It looked like that. I'm not 100% sure. With flowers. And then Kim says to Jimmy, whatever happens in there, I'm with you. And as they're walking in, you hear a voiceover of Jimmy saying, they dangle these things in front of you and tell you you have a chance, but it's a lie because they've already made up their mind. Then we hear someone say, and I can't picture the voice, it's a female voice, so all that's left is for us to hear your prepared statement. Then Mike hands a paper to Gus. Lalo's face flashes on the screen and a glove compartment opens and there's a gun. And then Jimmy is driving in the dark and just whacking, I think it's Jimmy, just whacking the wheel really hard from the back. So that's it.
Well, Hamlin, Hamlin, McGill is back means Jimmy has to be part of Hamlin, Hamlin, and McGill again because he's the McGill. So maybe that's his pathway to getting his license back. Some some weight from Howard to help him get back.
Yeah, that's going to be my guess. And they're going to do some kind of big production for the board where Jimmy is grieving at the gravesite with the flowers and Howard's on his side. And maybe Jimmy even tells him, you know, you destroyed my brother, make it up by doing something nice to me. Who knows? And they're fighting.
So they're going to film that of Jimmy at the grave and show it to the board?
That would be my guess. That's part of this. Jimmy was so distraught, which honestly, since I saw that, may have colored part of my opinion on what happened today or in that episode. But yeah, that's my guess, is that that's what they're going to do and show that it was just too much for him to speak about in a, you know.
Wouldn't that be a little bit calculated for the board to see a video of Jimmy at the grave? Like, he's just making a video of himself standing at the graveyard to make us think he cares. I mean, isn't that a little blunt-edged?
You know they're not going to do it like that, though. I mean, it's going to be something about Hamlin, and McGill being back, I think. And even though we've lost this great man, you know, and then maybe they'll just show the board the commercial that they did or whatever. We've lost this great man and destroyed this family and blah, blah, or whatever. I don't know. But.
Yeah, maybe.
We'll find out next week.
Yeah, I guess we will. It's hard to guess from these Nextons because they're often misleading and they're intentionally deceptive.
Intentionally. Yep. You're right.
All right, Michelle, well, that's all for 409, unless you got any final thoughts.
I think I'm thought out.
Yeah, this is a long one. Sorry to argue with you so much, but I think we just differ on that.
Well, and in all honesty, I think it's a fair difference. I completely see your side about it, and I don't even know that I completely disagree with you about the way it is. I just disagree with the way it should be. So that might be part of my...
Yeah, you care a lot about whether we agree or disagree, and I don't care at all. I just think it's best that we're interesting to people. Like, we talk about content intelligently, so I don't care if we agree at all, really. I don't think that that's bad that we don't agree. But I just feel like that's the way to look at this, is it's the, kind of the way it is. Whether it's right or wrong, that's kind of the way it is. But...
And that's true. You have to look at things like that. But at the same time, you know, we're actually, what we're talking about is fighting for what's just. And, you know, it's not just if it's not just, even if it is just the way it is. So,
I mean, it's kind of like me saying, oh, that AMC Javelin was a cool car, and you'd say, well, I don't even, that's interesting, but I don't even know there was an AMC Javelin, and me going, how could you not know there was an, like, you're just not tuned into that part of it like I am. I don't know. I think it's okay to not have to agree. Like, I agree that Javelin was a good looking car. Like, it doesn't matter. It's just an interesting part of the show.
Yeah. The Javelin was a cool car, though.
All right, Michelle, so see you next week on 410 Winter.
And it'll be the end, the very end. So we'll see you then.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye.